Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 8 of the Eyes Free Sports podcast. Once again, this is Greg Lindberg, your host here. On this episode, we caught up with a very accomplished Paralympian in track and field, and she also works for the United States Association of Blind Athletes, and she also has a very interesting story about how she runs with the guide dog that she has and a training program that's out there for running dogs for blind individuals who want to actually run with their guide dogs. So, on your mark, get set, listen. All right, joining me now on the Eyes Free Sports podcast is Pam McGonigal, and Pam is the Director of Development at the United States Association of Blind Athletes. Pam, thanks so much for joining us.
Sure, thank you for having me.
Absolutely, really looking forward to this. So if we could just start off with just a little bio about yourself, Pam, just kind of fill the listeners in about who you are and your background.
I am a track and field athlete, or a former track and field athlete, a retired former track and field athlete, however you want to say that. I'm a four-time Paralympian in track and field. My first games were in 1992 in Barcelona, Spain. My final games were in 2004 in Athens. Despite the fact I was specialized in track and field, I've actually personally participated in many sports: tandem cycling, downhill skiing, cross-country skiing, goalball, beatball, hiking, indoor climbing. Pretty much anything active is where I falls into my jurisdiction, so to speak. I am married and a mother of one. My son is also visually impaired, so we're very oriented into the adaptive sport arena here. And I've been involved with USABA for many years. A little bit over a year ago, I came on board as the director of development.
And I'm curious, if you don't mind, what exactly is your visual impairment?
So I have albinism, and I have some issues with nystagmus and cataracts. And so I have a visual acuity around 20 over 800 when everything's picture perfect. So in International Paralympic Land, I'm a 12. In USABA classification, I'm a B2. So I'm a guide-dependent athlete.
Gotcha. And I know you did mention your son is also visually impaired. Does he have the same condition?
He does. He has a little bit better visual acuity, so he's a B3 athlete.
I see. Okay. And then I did read that you have had some guide dogs, and I definitely love guide dogs. If you could talk about some of the dogs that you've had.
Sure. So I'm on my second guide. My guide dogs have both been from Guiding Eyes for the Blind out of Yorktown Heights, New York. My first dog was a black lab, and she worked 8 years for me. I tried to inspire her to embrace running as I did. Unfortunately, she wasn't particularly interested. but we did a lot of hiking, so that was really good. And then about 4 years ago, Guiding Eyes started a pilot program where they started training guide dogs to run. And so that became the Running Guide Dog Program out of Guiding Eyes. And Maida, my current guide, is a five-year-old German Shepherd. And she is a running guide dog. So she and I run together using the Roughwear Unifly harness, which is a harness that Roughwear developed in partnership with Guiding Eyes. Initially, the thought was that it was a really good harness for, teams running. And indeed it is. And now individuals are starting to use it, not just in running, but in all their day work. So Maida and I run anywhere from 3 miles to 10 miles at a time, and our pace can be as quick as low 6 minute pace to 8.5-9 minute miles. She runs on the roads, she runs on the trails, and it's incredible. It's such a blessing to have her by my side and to be able to put that harness on and anytime I want go out and run with her.
That is so cool. Yeah. And I would imagine there are certain breeds or even just certain types of dogs within breeds that they would use for running dogs.
Yeah, so Guiding Eyes uses labs. Their primarily dog is a lab, and then they have some shepherds. And we have a mix within the Running Guide Dog Program. There are probably about 25 to 30 teams nationwide at this point. And there are lots of labs and there are a couple shepherds, so it's kind of mixed. It really just depends on the individual dog. As for humans, some of us love to run and some some of us hate to, some others hate to run. I think it goes the same for the guide dogs, and they're sort of selected based on their interest and initiative when they're introduced to running when they're in training.
I see. And if you could just talk a little about, you know, what the guide dog means to you, having that dog, just in general terms. Let's say someone's out there listening to this, you know, maybe considering getting a guide dog. What would you say the guide dog really, you know, can do and really does for an individual in terms of benefiting their life?
So that's a great question. And I was not someone who ever really considered a guide dog because I have some vision, like I stated earlier. And I didn't realize, despite the fact I'm in the blind community, I didn't realize that individual, you know, you don't have to be totally blind to have a guide dog. And so a friend of mine had a dog and she suggested it. And so I started exploring it. And so my first dog was, no pun intended, but a real eye opener for me as to my ability to travel. I like to move quickly. I'm pretty agile and I'm fairly athletic. And so the cane did not offer me that freedom and that pace that I preferred to walk at. You can walk fast with a cane, of course. It's just like, if it wasn't as smooth for me as I would have liked it to be. And so I started using the guide dog and it was amazing. I actually feel when my hand is on the harness, I feel like I can see. I can tell when my dog looks left, right, up, down, even if it's just this tiny little shift of her head to look at something, I can feel it. And based on me knowing her as well as we communicate, sometimes I swear I know what she's looking at. Whether I do or not, I have no idea. However, in my head, I can. And I do have some sense of what it is that she's looking at based on, you know, the environment we're in and whatnot. She makes it very, very smooth for me. I also notice that, you know, people, the general public can tend to shy away from a cane. Whereas a dog, they tend to be more open to interaction with the person. And so that's kind of been interesting as well. Because my guide dog runs, I coach cross country. It's a school for kindergarten through eighth grade. We have about 45 kids, and they are, you know, basically between 5 and 12 or 13, eighth grade. And we break up into little individual groups depending on the pace that the runners are able to handle. And with Maida by my side, I'm able to shift between the groups throughout any given day at practice. And so that's been really awesome. And I have found that she just works great with those 8 and 9 year old Rammy boys. We sort of let them have their fun for the first 5 minutes. And then everybody, including Maida, gets down to business. And she brings a lot. You know, it's a partnership, and together we're able to bring so much to the team. So she impacts all of our lives. I think she even impacts my husband in the sense that he feels really confident in her ability. And so when I'm out and about, because I'm not really one to sit back in the house and hang, you know, he feels really comfortable knowing she's by my side.
Right. Very interesting. I like what you said about how the dog, you know, impacts everyone around the individual that actually has the dog. I think a lot of people assume that it's just, you know, helping that one individual, when in fact it really, you know, brings such a positive spirit, if you want to call it, to just the whole environment.
Yeah, absolutely. And they do so even without, you know, I'm quite strict about when she's working, she's working, and she's not really allowed to interact with others around her. But yet just her presence, and then, you know, when the opportunities present themselves, I allow her to interact with different groups of people. And it's just really positive, and it brings a lot of good energy, and it opens the door for education, and also to present an opportunity for people who might not be so comfortable being around a person who's visually impaired or blind to be comfortable being in their presence simply by the existence of the dog, making them feel comfortable.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very well said.
Thank you.
Let's talk about blind sports. And I'm curious, just thinking back, when did you first get involved in sports for the visually impaired?
So I have been active in athletics since sixth grade. I was required to participate in a track meet. At first, I was kind of frustrated because I thought to myself, what am I going to do? I settled on the half mile. I ran the half mile. I told my parents I was going to win. I fortunately did. And that was in a mainstream setting. And so I then participated in track and field and cross country throughout college. But as my vision decreased over the years in college, I started falling a lot and just really struggling. And I had a couple serious falls that resulted in pretty significant injuries. And so I realized, you know, it was time to sort of hang up the spikes. At that very same time, I was doing practicum hours for my health and physical education degree. And a friend of mine were working a clinic on a Saturday morning to get those hours. And it happened that the group that came in was visually impaired and blind sports. And someone recognized, or one of the coaches noticed that I was visually impaired and started talking to me. And at that point, I was introduced to the concept of utilizing a guide while running. And, you know, I was just a couple months away from graduation, so it wasn't able to impact my college athletic career in a positive way, but it introduced me to USABA, and that was 1991. And then my first games was 1992. So pretty quickly, you know, I was introduced in basically late 1990 and immediately fell into the USABA national scene for track and field. And then my Paralympic career took off and went from there.
Wow, that's awesome. And as far as the Paralympics go, I know you mentioned the 1992 games, you know, were your first experience. If you could think back to that competition, that time, and just that whole experience, what that was like for you.
That was a huge milestone in my life. Not only did it, you know, the concept of running with a guide gave me back the sport that I loved and the thing that gave and continues to give me. The confidence to walk around with having very limited visual capacity. And in the spring of 91, I lost my father to a terminal disease, and to cancer. And he was always a huge supporter. He never missed a meet. He was always at my cross country meets all throughout high school and college when I was running. And so I made, now I can look back and say it was foolish. At the time, it was just emotional. I had made him a promise that I would win gold for him in Barcelona. Hmm. And, you know, he passed away before I had the opportunity to physically deliver that gold to him. But, you know, a year and a half later, I was in Barcelona and won gold in my 3,000-meter race. So obviously, Barcelona is something that will be with me for my entire life and has had a significant impact on me personally, professionally, emotionally, physically, everything. It's an experience that I treasure, and I'm so grateful to have had the opportunity to be a part of that event and then to see my career go on as long as it did. I'm definitely very, very fortunate and very blessed and thankful for all of the guide runners who sacrificed their runs each day to run by my side to make sure that I was fit and where I needed to be for events, and for the coaches and for my family for being on that ride with me, because it was a 16-year adventure. One that is definitely I treasure, and if you know, I hope everyone can have, you know, a quarter of the event. If everyone who's active in sports has a quarter of the opportunities or an eighth of the opportunities that I've had through blind sports, that would be awesome, because that would be something that impacts them. I mean, there's just so many great opportunities, and there's so much to be gained. And it doesn't have to, it's not just for someone who's at that elite level. It's for everyone, you know, just setting those personal goals and working really hard to reach those goals. And frankly, falling down in the process of striving to achieve. There's a lot to be learned from that. And it makes, you know, getting to that goal, that ultimate goal, even sweeter. So I put a lot of emphasis on the Paralympics and what they mean to me, but just being active in sport is really important, and it's for everyone. So I just want to make sure that people, you know, don't hear some, you know, you're listening and you hear a Paralympian speaking and you think, oh, it's just elite. It's not. There are so many opportunities for everyone, and so many great opportunities that can impact your life in so many ways. I just encourage everyone to explore what exists and to, you know, get out there and give it your best and don't give up and find, you know, keep trying different things until you find what you really love to do.
Absolutely, no doubt. Now let's talk about the USABA, and if you could just briefly talk about the history of USABA, kind of when it started and kind of how it's grown over time.
Sure. So USABA was founded in 1976, so we've been around for a very long time. And it's evolved over the years in different ways. We used to do what we called a multi-sport nationals, and that's where, you know, track and field, swimming, goalball, judo, all the sports came together at the same time in the same place, and national champions were named in each of the respective sports and events. With the evolution of the Paralympic movement, things have evolved for USABA as well, because USABA used to oversee all of the elite level competition for visually impaired and blind athletes in the United States. And now the respective sports are designated out to different governing bodies, so to speak. USABA still is the high performance home for men's and women's goalball. We have resident programs in Fort Wayne, Indiana for both the men's and the women's goalball teams. They train together all year round. They compete together throughout the course of a year, internationally, nationally, but then they also will compete on local home teams as well. We have several cycling camps each year for individuals who are interested in starting to compete. So both of them are in Colorado Springs at the Olympic and Paralympic Training Center. You come in for a week, you're introduced to the different aspects of tandem cycling. We have a pretty nice running series, which culminates with the USABA National Marathon Championships, which is held in conjunction with the California International Marathon each December. We have 50 to 60 runners present at that event, along with guides, which is an awesome opportunity. We have winter sports festivals, two of them. We have one in Breckenridge, Colorado. We have one in Killington, Vermont, that offers opportunities for individuals who want to learn how to alpine ski, Nordic ski, snowshoe, snowboard. Those events are open to individuals who have had zero experience, never been on skis, never been on a snowboard before, to people who, you know, are chasing a Paralympic dream. So it really, they're available to a wide range of ability levels. We have some triathlon camps as well. Last summer, we had a youth ID camp at the Olympic and Paralympic Training Center in Colorado Springs, where we brought 20 youth, 10 boys, 10 girls, into the Olympic and Paralympic Training Center for a week, and we introduced them to the various sports. We are in the process of building five-a-side or blind football or blind soccer. It's called different things by different people. That's why I listed it as three names. We're in the process of developing programs there. We have a national fitness challenge or wellness activity challenge, which just the goal of that is to get as many people up and active, doing, you know, running, walking, weight training, aerobics, yoga, anything, just being active. We have locations across the country that host those, the National Fitness Challenge each year. You know, a great way to follow USABA is on Facebook. We have an active Facebook page where we post things about upcoming events, and we also post articles that may be of interest about individual athletes or about different sports for visually impaired and blind. We also have, we're a membership organization, so I'd encourage people to go to usaba.org. That's www.usaba.org. You can join a membership for $50 annually, and you would receive every other week you will receive an e-newsletter that outlines again the different events that are approaching. We do a donor spotlight, we do a member spotlight, we do interest articles of individuals doing different sports across the country.
Very nice. And it's just, to me, I'm still amazed at how many different things USABA is involved in, just the variety of sports and events. And like you said, it's not just for, you know, the elite athletes. It's literally any, you know, people that have zero experience doing a lot of these sports can get involved.
Yes.
And as far as your role as Director of Development, what does that actually entail?
So as Director of Development, I work very closely with our Executive Director and our program staff, and we look for ways to fund our programs. And so we write grants, we work with corporations to identify potential partnerships, we raise money through individuals, we have a legacy program. So everything I do is around raising awareness and raising dollars so that we're able to support our programming.
Let's talk about some of the opportunities as far as funding, as far as grants. I know that you do offer, you know, if someone, say, cannot afford to attend one of these, you know, training programs or whatnot, that you guys do offer some, you know, some funding sources.
Yes. For veteran athletes, we have a designated fund where we can provide support for our veteran, our blinded veterans. For individuals who are not veterans, depending on the specific event, there are opportunities for scholarships to be awarded so that people can attend. It's really on an event by event basis. So if you're interested, don't let that stop you. Check out a program that exists, contact us, let us know you're interested, let us know if you need financial support. If there's some available, we'll let you know what process to go through in order to obtain that. I know just on top of that, there are other ways to generate dollars in order to go to these events, even outside of what USABA offers. You know, you can go to local Lions clubs, local Rotary clubs, local Delta Gamma chapters sometimes give out scholarships, awards for individuals to go to sporting events. So there are lots of ways to make things become a reality. And so definitely don't let the challenge of finding the dollars to be able to participate hinder you. Reach out. There are some great visually impaired and blind groups on Facebook where people kick around ideas. Everyone's really pretty receptive and friendly and wants to share ideas and resources. So definitely don't let the dollars be a hindrance to participating in different events.
Right. Absolutely. I did want to just briefly get into a few sports specifically and some of the adaptations that are used with them. I know you mentioned some of the winter sports as far as, say, skiing, snowboarding, snowshoeing. What types of adaptations are actually used for those sports?
With the winter sports program, it's really important that it's not necessary, but it's really helpful and it's really important if you are participating in an established program that has volunteers that have been trained to guide someone who's visually impaired or blind. Just because of, you know, if you're alpine skiing and you're going down a hill, it's really a good idea to have a guide that's quite skilled and experienced, because of the, you know, it's not quite the same as just walking down the street and picking up any old guide to go for a run or to go for a walk. So right. It's nice to find an established program. The programs that we utilize provide guides, one or two guides per person. It just depends on the ability level, the experience of the skier, the comfort level of the skier. The techniques used for guiding vary. You know, when you're just starting, you might have you might use a ski pole, and you might have, you know, the blind skier would be in the middle, and on the right would be a guide, and on the left would be a guide. Everyone would be holding on to the ski pole, which would be out in front of you, basically waist height. And so you would as the blind skier, you would reach out, you would put both hands around the pole. Each guide would have a hand on it, and then you would all, as a group, ski forward. So that's a really basic elementary adaptation. If you're a more experienced skier, if you just depending on your comfort level, depending on your visual acuity, visual abilities, you might have a guide in front of you wearing a very bright, loud, fluorescent vest. It would say guide. You would have a vest that says blind skier, just in order to let the people around you know. And so if they see that, then they'll hopefully stay out of the way of the guide and the blind skier. But some people have enough visual acuity to follow the guide that's out in front of them if they just, you know, keep a certain distance together. Others might use voice commands. So you might have a skier in front of you and a skier behind you, and, you know, the guides would be calling left, right, turn. You know, everybody creates their own sort of little system. And then at the Paralympic level, they have more sophistication, and they have inside the helmets, they have the voice units, and you can talk back and forth.
Very cool. And then in terms of soccer, I know you mentioned five-a-side soccer is one of the names for that sport. How exactly does that work?
Yes, so I'm not particularly an expert on five-a-side, but I'll do my best. So anyone out there who's listening who is really a five-a-sider, they're going to laugh at me, but I'll try. I haven't actually technically played. So there is the pitch, which is the field of play, and the perimeter of the pitch has boundaries that are either like walls or, you know, wooden print, like, you know, wooden walls, or they're inflated. We have inflatable ones as well. And you put them on the four sides. So it's a rectangle, and you put these barriers on the different sides. And so the players, instead of seeing the line and not crossing over it, you touch the barrier and you know that that's the, you know, you stay within that and it's the field of play. There are five players on the field at a time. There is a goalie. The goalie can be partially or fully sighted. The other athletes that are in the field of play wear eye shades, as in goal ball, as in beat ball, so as to level the playing field, so everybody's working with the same, you know, zero visual acuity. The ball is roughly the size, it's the same size as a soccer ball, but inside it has something inside it so that it makes noise. So when you kick the ball, it makes noise. You, the player, as you proceed or move down the field, you, sometimes they say voy, and it means move, and that notifies the other players on the field that you're moving forward.
Very interesting. And then I would imagine, just, you know, based on your background and experience running track and field, is that pretty much your bread and butter, so to speak, your favorite sport?
It is indeed, yes.
Yeah. Yes. And can you just talk a little bit about running with a human guide versus running with your guide dog? And I'm sure there are some differences. And do you prefer one method over the other?
Yeah, so there are definitely differences. The form that you have when you run with the guide dog is really different than the form you have when you run with a human guide. So running with a human guide, it is more, you're really just running with typical physiologically accurate form. When you run with your guide dog, your hand is always on the harness and it's dropped a little bit lower, and you don't really swing it back and forth. It stays stationary on the harness so that you can get the feedback from the dog's harness. When you sight guide, you can use a tether, you can go side by side, you can touch, you can hold the elbow, you can hold the wrist. It really just depends. You know, there's formal ways to guide run within the Paralympic movement, but outside of the Paralympic movement, you can guide run using whatever technique works best for you. So some people use there are some people that use a cane and the guide runs behind and each of them hold on to the cane. I've actually never tried that, but I've seen it done. Well, I haven't really seen it done, but you know what I mean? I know that it's been done.
Yep.
I am curious what it looks like, but anyway, when I was on the track, I tended to tether if I was at international competition. I like to run technical trails. And so when I run technical trails, I don't really have any usable vision in those situations, and so I actually tuck my arm on the inside of the guide runner's arm, and so our arms are parallel, and then I take my hand and I put it around their wrist to sort of lock into place. And the reason for that is because when you're on the technical trail, there's less margin for error because there's rocks and there's roots and there's, you know, drop-offs and whatnot. So it's really critical that I'm very close to the guide and that I can feel their body movement so that I can be aware of what's going on underneath my feet without actually seeing it. So I like, you know, it just depends. When I was competing, it's clear to me that the best way to run would be with a human guide runner, because you can't run, you know, to run a sub-5-minute mile, you know, moving about with other people on the track, my dog could physically do that, but there's no way that she could maneuver between people, and she, you know, she couldn't count her moves the way that a sighted guide could, conveying to me what's going on. But in a road race, we've run, you know, pretty nice pace, and she does a really good job maneuvering around people and avoiding obstacles and identifying potholes and going around them. So, you know, where I am in my life right now, the running guide dog is perfect. And I think if I were back in the day when I was running competitively, I think she would have been really, really helpful for easy days, you know, just what I call distance days, where we'd just go out and run 5 or 7 or 8 miles at an easy pace. That would have been perfect, and it would have been really, really helpful. And it would definitely have supplemented my training in a way that would have been beneficial to my ultimate performance. But I think, you know, I think technical trails is probably better with a sighted guide. Although she and I do some technical trails, but not the most complicated, not the most challenging. I would leave her home for those.
Right. And just to wrap up here, if you could just speak a little bit about, you know, let's say someone's listening to this who's really never been very active at all, you know, who is either blind or visually impaired, what kind of advice would you give that person as far as kind of the first step toward becoming more active?
So I'd say think about the different opportunities that exist. Think of the different sports or activities that might be of interest to you. Maybe it's indoor climbing. There are lots of local indoor climbing gyms popping up, and you know, that's a great place to be able to do something. Think about just getting active, and if the opportunity presents, just even getting out for a walk. You know, maybe you want to set a goal of walking a mile, and maybe eventually you want to walk a 5K, and then maybe you want to walk run a 5K. So I think identify what you like to do. Because I think it's really important to have fun with what you're doing and to enjoy it, because it's more likely that you'll get out there and do it. Go into it knowing that there are going to be days that might be challenging, because you're not going to have the human person or the accommodation or the adaptation you need. Just know that's going to exist. And I think that it's still frustrating, but I think if we accept ahead of time that that's going to happen, it makes it a little bit easier when we encounter it. Just stay positive, set goals. You know, when they don't go the way you want, get irritated, but, you know, step back, refocus, and plow forward. Try to find people to surround yourself with that also like to do the activity that you've selected. Try to get on Facebook and find these different visually impaired groups, and you know, find a mentor, find people within the community that are your peers that can support you and give you ideas. There's a lot of great energy out there in the visually impaired and blind active community. And, you know, it's just a great thing. And I think it transfers so well to, you know, we're at a disadvantage in our daily mobility because of our visual impairment. You know, you don't see a curb and you trip off it. It can be tough and it can set you back. It can give you, you know, you can end up with a sprained ankle or whatnot. I think the more active and the more fit we are, the less likely those things are going to happen, and the more likely we're going to be more mobile. And it's also, for me, and I think most people who are active would say the same, you gain so much confidence from being active and feeling good about yourself. So just get out there, have fun, don't give up. Find something to set a goal and then work towards that goal.
Absolutely. Once again, very well said. I couldn't have said it any better.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I definitely appreciate your time, Pam, for joining us here on the podcast. I did want to mention again, usaba.org is the website for the United States Association of Blind Athletes. And I know you mentioned that there's a nice social media presence you guys also have. Once again, I really appreciate your time, and thanks so much for joining us.
Sure, my pleasure, and thank you for hosting these podcasts. That's great. It's getting information out there, and that's going to get more people active and aware of what's available. So thank you for your part in raising awareness.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. Thank you, Pam.
Be sure to follow the Eyes Free Sports podcast at facebook.com/eyesfreesports and on Twitter @eyesfreesports.